Hi everyone, welcome back to Hands-Free Studying for the MBE with Brainscape. Today's video is about real property. So get ready and let's get started with our first set of cards covering property interests. Question one, what are four types of present possessory estates? The four types of present possessory estates are first, the fee simple absolute, second, defeasible estates, which include fee simple determinables, fee simple subject to condition subsequent, and a fee simple subject to executory limitation. You also can have a life estate, and lastly, a non-freehold estate, including something like a leasehold estate. Question two, what is a fee simple absolute? A fee simple absolute grants absolute ownership for a potentially indefinite duration. Fee simple absolutes are freely alienable, divisible, and descendable. Question three, is there a future interest in a fee simple absolute? No, there is no future interest in a fee simple absolute. Question four, the type of language 2A or 2A and his or her heirs creates what type of interest? This type of language creates a fee simple absolute. Question five, what is a life estate? A life estate is an interest that lasts for the duration of the grantee's life. The grantee is then called the life tenant. Life estates are freely transferable during the life of the life tenant, but they're usually not divisible or descendable. Question six, the type of language 2A for life creates what type of interest? This type of language creates a life estate. Question seven, what is a life estate pour autre vie? A life estate pour autre vie is a life estate that is measured by someone other than the grantee's life. For example, 2A for the life of C is a life estate pour autre vie. Question eight, what are the two possible future interests in a life estate? The two possible future interests in a life estate are first, reversion, which creates a future interest in O, the grantor. This is signified with language such as 2A for life. You also can have a remainder, which creates a future interest in a third party. These can either be contingent or vested. And it's created by language that says something like 2A for life, then 2B. Question nine, if the holder of a life estate transfers that interest, the grantee receives a life estate measured by the life of the blank grantor. Question 10, what are the rights of a life tenant? The life tenant has the right to possession, the right to rent and earn profits during the term, and also the right to lease, sell, or mortgage the property. These upcoming property questions cover landlord-tenant law. Okay, let's get started. Question one, what is a leasehold estate, and what are the four types of leasehold estates? A leasehold estate is an estate created and governed by a lease between the parties. The four types are a tenancy for years, periodic tenancy, tenancy at will, and lastly, a tenancy at sufferance. Question two, what is a tenancy for years? A tenancy for years can also be called a term for years, a fixed term tenancy, or an estate for years. Question three, When is a tenancy for years required to be in writing? If the lease is longer than 1 year, then it must be in writing to satisfy the statute of frauds. Question 4. When does a tenancy for years terminate? A tenancy for years terminates automatically at the end of the fixed period or end date. Question 5. What is a periodic tenancy? A periodic tenancy is one that automatically renews at the end of the period with no set end date, for example, a month-to-month lease. Okay, question 6. How is a periodic tenancy created? There are 3 ways to create a periodic tenancy. The first is by express agreement. The second is by implication. So for example, if there's no explicit end date in the agreement, then it's implied that you have a periodic tenancy. And the third is by operation of law. For example, if you have a holdover tenant or if you have an invalid lease, then you will have a periodic tenancy. Question 7. What is a holdover tenant? Holdover tenant is someone who overstays their lease without the landlord's consent. Holdover tenants can also be called a tenant at sufferance. Question 8. What actions can a landlord take if they have a holdover tenant? If the landlord has a holdover tenant, they generally have 2 options. They can first refuse to accept payment from the holdover tenant, at which point the tenant will become a tenant in sufferance, and then the landlord can evict them. Or you can bind the tenant to a periodic tenancy by either accepting the rent or giving notice to the holdover tenant. Question 9. What is the effect if a landlord accepts rent from a holdover tenant? If the landlord accepts rent from a holdover tenant, then a periodic tenancy is created for that payment period. Question 10. Can the landlord raise the rent for a holdover tenant in a periodic tenancy? Yes, the landlord can raise the rent for a holdover tenant as long as the landlord gave notice to the tenant before the original lease expired. These upcoming property questions cover servitudes. Okay, let's get started. Question 1. What are the 5 categories of servitudes? The 5 categories of servitudes are first, easements, second, licenses, third, profits, fourth, covenants, and fifth, equitable servitudes. All right, question 2. What is an easement? An easement is a right to a non-possessory property interest in the land. Question 3. What is a dominant estate? The dominant estate is the land or property that benefits from the easement. Question 4. What is the servient estate? The servient estate is the land burdened by the easement. Question 5. What is an affirmative easement? An affirmative easement gives the holder the right to affirmatively use the servient estate. In other words, to do something on the servient estate. Question 6. What is a negative easement? A negative easement prevents the servient estate from doing something it would otherwise be allowed to do on the land. Negative easements are only allowed in very particular circumstances, and you can remember these by the acronym LAS. Negative easements are only allowed if they affect light, air, support, and stream water from an artificial flow. Question 7. How are negative easements created? Negative easements are only created expressly. They must be signed and in writing. Question 8. What is an easement appurtenant? An easement appurtenant is an easement that benefits one parcel of land, the dominant estate, while burdening another, the servient estate. Easement appurtenants are attached to the land and not to a person. This is a really important distinction. Question 9. What is an easement in gross? An easement in gross benefits a person or entity instead of a parcel of land. No dominant estate is involved, only a servient estate. An example of an easement in gross is a billboard or power lines on the servient estate. Question 10. Can you transfer an easement appurtenant? And can you transfer an easement in gross? Yes, you can transfer an easement appurtenant. It will be transferred automatically because it's attached to the dominant estate. It does not need to be explicitly stated in the transfer. An easement in gross, however, is not transferable unless for a commercial purpose. These upcoming property questions cover zoning and land rights. All right, let's get started. Question 1. What are lateral support rights? Lateral support rights hold that landowners have the right to lateral support from the adjoining land. Question 2. If a landowner excavates his own land and then damages the adjoining property, will the landowner be liable if the land is in its natural state? Yes, if the land is in its natural state, then the landowner will be held strictly liable for the damage. Question 3. If a landowner excavates his own land and damages the adjoining land, will he be liable if the land has been improved? This hinges on whether the improvement contributed to the collapse. If the improvement did contribute to the collapse, then the excavating landowner will only be liable if they were negligent. However, if the improvement did not contribute to the collapse, then the excavating landowner will be held strictly liable. Question 4. What are subjacent support rights? Subjacent support rights state that surface structures have the right to support from underneath the land. Remember that subjacent means underneath. These are important if a landowner allows another party to mine, tunnel, or say build an underground parking structure. The other party must ensure surface structures are adequately supported. Question 5. If a third party has underground or subjacent support rights, will they be liable if they damage the surface structure? If the structures existed at the time of conveyance, then the third party will be held strictly liable. However, if the structures were built after the conveyance, the party will only be found negligent.
Okay, let's take a quick study break to remind you to breathe deep through your abdomen, not swallow through your chest. The more oxygen that you can get in with each breath, the better memory retention you'll have. All right, let's get back to questions 6 through 10.
Question 6. What are riparian rights and what are the two main approaches? Riparian rights are the rights to use water from watercourses that border one's land. This includes streams, rivers, and lakes. It's governed by either the riparian doctrine or by the prior appropriation doctrine. Question 7. What is the riparian doctrine view of water rights? The riparian doctrine holds that water belongs to those who own the land bordering the watercourse. This doctrine adopts the reasonable use standard. Riparians have the right to reasonable use of the water, and they cannot unreasonably interfere with another's riparian rights. In this doctrine, natural use trumps artificial use. Question 8. What is the prior appropriation doctrine? The prior appropriation doctrine holds that the first person to make beneficial or productive use of the water has the legal right to continue using it. For example, using water for crops. Note again that natural use trumps artificial use. Question 9. What are the rights for groundwater? Surface owners can make reasonable use of the groundwater. These are also called correlative rights. Question 10. What are surface water rights? And what are the three governing approaches to surface water? Surface water rights are rights to water that is either from rain, springs, or melted snow that is not part of a waterway. The three governing approaches are first, the common enemy doctrine, which holds that the owner can make changes to combat flow or drainage, but they will be liable for negligence if they damage another's land. The second approach is the natural flow theory, which states that an owner cannot make changes to combat flow. And lastly, we have the reasonable use theory, which holds that an owner can make reasonable changes to combat flow, but this balances the harm versus utility of that change.
These upcoming property questions cover mortgages. All right, let's get started. Question 1. What are the two types of security interests? Deeds of trust and mortgages. Question 2. What is a deed of trust? A deed of trust is an alternative to a mortgage. Here, the debtor borrows money from a lender and then deeds the property to a third party as collateral. Once the debtor repays the debt, the third party then releases the deed back to the debtor. Question 3. What is a mortgage? A mortgage is a security interest in real property between a borrower and a lender that secures the performance of an obligation. Typically, that obligation is the repayment of a loan. Question 4. What's the difference between a deed of trust and a mortgage? In a deed of trust, you have three parties involved. You have the borrower or the debtor, you have the lender, and then you have the trustee. In a mortgage, however, only two parties are involved, the borrower or the debtor and the lender. Question 5. What is an equitable mortgage? An equitable mortgage is where the lender secures the mortgage by taking possession of all the original title documents to the property. This means that the lender has the right to sell the property, foreclose the property, and appoint a receiver if the borrower does not pay. Question 6. Who is the mortgagor? The mortgagor is the borrower or the debtor. Question 7. Who is the mortgagee? The mortgagee is the lender or the creditor. Question 8. What is the difference between a mortgage and a note? A mortgage represents the interest in the land. A note, however, represents the debt of the mortgagor. Now, remember though, that the mortgage follows the note. If you have a note, then it is presumed that you have the mortgage as well. Question 9. Who has the title and right to the property interest in a lien theory jurisdiction, which is the majority, and then in a title theory jurisdiction, which is the minority? In a lien theory jurisdiction, the mortgagor borrower has the title and right to possession. The mortgagee lender has a lien on that interest. In a title theory jurisdiction, however, the mortgagee lender has title and right to possession. Question 10. What is an absolute deed of sale? An absolute deed of sale transfers an unrestricted title to the property, free of all liens and encumbrances.
These upcoming property questions cover competing claims. Okay, let's get started. Question 1. What is adverse possession? Adverse possession is the method of acquiring title to another's land by hostile, continuous possession for a period of time. Question 2. What are the elements of adverse possession? There are 5. The trespasser's possession must be 1. Continuous for the duration of the statutory period, 2. Open and notorious, 3. Actual, 4. Hostile, and 5. Exclusive. Question 3. What is the default statutory period for adverse possession? 20 years. Question 4. What does it mean for possession to be continuous? Continuous possession is uninterrupted use of the property throughout the statutory period. Question 5. Does seasonal or infrequent use count as continuous possession? Yes, as long as it is consistent with the ordinary use of the property. For example, if the property is a ski cabin or summer beach house. Question 6. What is tacking? Tacking is when a trespasser tacks on a prior adverse possession period to meet the statutory requirement. Now note, to tack on, there must be privity between the trespassers. The new trespasser must take by non-hostile means without gaps in possession. Question 7. When is tacking not allowed? Tacking is not allowed if the new trespasser has taken control of the property through hostile means. Question 8. Does the statute of limitations run if the rightful owner was disabled when the adverse possession started? No. The statute of limitations will toll or pause if the rightful owner was disabled, for example, they are a minor, incarcerated, or mentally incompetent, for example, when the adverse possession started. Question 9. What is actual possession? Actual possession is actual physical possession of the property. Question 10. What is open and notorious possession? Open and notorious possession is possession that is obvious and not hidden. In other words, the owner would know of it with reasonable inspection. And that's the end of your real property study round.
To reach full mastery, remember to study in Brainscape. Our mobile and web app uses the latest in spaced repetition techniques, allowing you to optimize your study time and track your progress down to the finest detail. But of course, when you're driving, cooking, exercising, or otherwise unable to navigate the app, be sure to keep listening to the rest of this hands-free studying playlist. No matter what subject you're learning and what method you're studying it, Brainscape helps you rise to your challenge.